Wednesday morning, it's City Talk, 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. This is the Duncan Berkshire, and we've talked about this so far this morning. Today, the 25th of June, well, 1903 would have been the birth date of George Orwell, of course, a man behind 1984. So it gives us a perfect opportunity to revisit something we talk about frequently on this show, the surveillance state. George Orwell's 1984, exactly how much did he get right? I'm very pleased to welcome to the show this morning the former Shadow Home Secretary. He resigned earlier this month over the opposition, or rather opposition to the government's plans to detain terror suspects without charge for up to 42 days. His name is David Davis and he joins me on the line. Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, thank you for joining us. And can I just say, a lot of people I've spoken to actually admire a politician who's principled enough to stand by his principles and make a stand.
Well, that's kind of you. I was just listening with interest to your 1984 opening. Of course, what that was a transposition of 1948,
yeah,
which is when he wrote it, when he thought the way he thought the country was going at that point in time. Of course, it was the year I was born. I have a birthday interest too.
Well, listen, it's good to have you on. I mean, what I wanted to talk about very briefly is your current campaign, because,
yeah,
I mean, this has been ongoing, and again, I think it's people are divided about this. I mean, you've had a bit of a bashing from some tabloid editors, particularly a newspaper that in Liverpool has a terrible reputation, The Sun. But, you know, a lot of people are saying something has to be done. We are living in a culture now. We're living in a country where you have one CCTV camera, they reckon, for every 14 people. I mean, we are a very monitored country, aren't we?
We are. And, of course, the problem with it is people think, well, that gives me protection. That, you know, that gives that as a deterrent to the criminal. And,
yeah,
of course, if a crime takes place, then we can sort it out. Well, actually, 80%, 8 out of 10 of those cameras is no use in court.
Right.
And the result is only one, less than one in 30 court cases is resolved by CCTV. So we've got the worst of all worlds. On the one hand, we've got, frankly, useless CCTV for judicial purposes, but it can be used, as one was, to spy on a woman undressing and then have that projected on a plasma screen in a oversight centre,
mm,
you know, which should never happen. So we've got no real serious protections for our privacy on the one hand, and yet it doesn't work on the other. What we ought to have is those CCTV cameras that are there should always be capable of being used in court, and all the time, you and I and your listeners should be protected from our, mm, privacy invaded. And you can do that with a proper fierce law that says, you know, if you misuse this, you go to jail.
Why do you think we put up with it for so long?
Well, partly because it's piece by piece. You know, this is a piecemeal erosion,
yeah,
of freedom. I mean, we have for hundreds of years been seen in the world at large as one of the freest countries in the world. That's actually been a great advantage for us. It's encouraged our national character, our trade, our science, our engineering, our literature, our art, because we are very, very freely spoken people, not least in Liverpool, I have to say.
Yeah.
then that actually makes our society more vigorous.
Mm.
But it's been sliced up piece by piece, and each piece has appeared to be popular. You know, people like a CCTV camera to protect their house. Well, until they find it doesn't work, you know. DNA database. They read,
yeah,
about somebody being caught on the DNA database. You know, actually, you got a million innocent people on that database, and that million people has only led to solving 100 crimes, a tiny number. So all these things are sold to people as being in their interest, and in the very short term, they think, oh, that's a good idea. But when you add it all up, you know, database society, ID cards,
yeah,
we put all our information in one place, CCTV cameras, more than in any fascist state, any dictatorship,
yeah,
more cameras than anybody else. All those things together start to erode what it actually means to be British, to be a very, very free society.
I mean, as you rightly pointed out, a number of things there. We have the ID cards, we have the CCTV and surveillance, we have the DNA database. Now we have the detention without charge. It's something, I mean, for you, was it the straw that broke the camel's back?
Yeah, it was the last line in the sand.
Mm.
I mean, I'd spent a whole year studying this.
Mm.
In great detail. I mean, you know, I'm known generally as being incredibly tough on crime and,
yeah,
terror. That's been my reputation,
sure, yeah,
and properly so.
Yeah.
But I went through this, and I found, just for the 28 days, let alone the 4 weeks, not the 6 weeks, that the longer you keep people, the more likely they are to be either innocent,
yeah,
or peripheral to the plot.
Yeah.
If you're a copper and you've got people under arrest, you focus first on the most dangerous.
Mm.
So in the alleged Heathrow plot, all the people who were accused of conspiracy to murder, the most serious charge were charged before 21 days, and the vast majority of them before 14 days. It was only the ones left over at the end who had acts preparatories and so on, and half of those were innocent. And people were carefully innocent, not just not charged, innocent. Yeah. I talked to the police. I said, well, have you got them under continuing surveillance? Well, they said, let's release them. No. Under control order? No. Surveillance? No. Have you got ongoing investigations against them? No. So you're telling me you think they're innocent? Shrug of shoulders, yes. You know. And so when half are innocent, we are actually making a rod for our own backs because, you know, Muslim radicals, not ordinary Muslims, not decent, moderate Muslims, but the radicalizers, the ones who want to turn people against our country, they can turn around and say, look, these people are locking up Muslims and are using the laws against them unfairly. These are innocent people. And, of course, that means they can more easily radicalize young people who are then misled into becoming terrorists or terrorist sympathizers. They can make it more difficult for us to get community intelligence. In fact, in the bill, in the act that the government brought to the House, there's a thing called an impact statement. And in it, it admits that this would or has a risk of reducing the intelligence we can gather. So it's both bad for fighting terror and actually bad for our liberal traditions, our tradition of freedom. And I just, at that point, I just thought, something's got to happen. And frankly, I mean, I didn't want to do it.
No,
I preferred to win the vote.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just came to the conclusion that somebody's got to stand in the way of this juggernaut. Now, I may get run down, but somebody had to do it.
Well, I mean, it got through by the skin of its teeth, didn't it, with nine votes, and there's much speculation that a deal was done in order to push it through.
Well, we won the vote. I mean, if you were in the House on the day, you would have seen we won the vote easily.
Yeah.
We won the argument easily, beg your pardon. But the vote was bought.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the DUP, the Northern Irish, the Democratic Unionist Party, were saying to me a week before, you needn't worry. When I talked to them, you shouldn't worry. You know, and even on the day, it was not sure, and then suddenly they changed. Similarly, there were a lot of other people who were given things. I'm not talking about individual bribes.
No.
They were given things that they wanted politically. I mean, and there are things that actually I've had some sympathy with. For example, lifting sanctions against Cuba or voting to lift sanctions. Well, that may be a good idea, but it shouldn't be used to buy this vote. Or improving the miners' welfare fund. Well, it certainly is a good idea. I've got minor constituents.
Sure.
But it shouldn't be used to buy the vote. And so all of a sudden we had, frankly, in Parliament, a corrupt outcome on a critical issue. And at that point, I'm afraid the iron ended into my soul.
Okay, I must remind people, it is the Duncan Bark Show at City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool, talking to the former Shadow Home Secretary, David Davis, this morning. We'll get on to the George Orwell question in a few moments' time. I mean, you've been re-adopted by your local party.
Yeah.
The by-election now is happening on July the 10th. Labour and the Lib Dems are not putting forward any candidates. Does that bother you at all?
Well, the Lib Dems and indeed UKIP are not putting forward candidates because they agree with me.
Mm.
You know, they say this is a good cause to fight. We want to be on the same side.
Yeah.
Labour are not putting forward a candidate for a different reason. They're not putting forward a candidate because they don't want to have the argument. I mean, frankly, they know that whenever we are, they know that if you don't talk about it too much, these things are popular. You know, people say, well, 42 days, why not 42 years for terrorists? Thinking, they're not talking just about terrorists, but people who are just accused of terrorists, not the same thing. And they know that on things like CCTV cameras and others, that they are in the lead, as it were. They've got the popular support, so long as we don't discuss the weaknesses of their strategy. So the last thing they want is an argument. And so that's why they put nobody up. And actually, I should tell you, I have written to every single cabinet member. I've written to every current and past Home Secretary, and none of them will join in debate. Not one.
Okay. I mean, do you think the people of this country realise what's at stake? I mean, with the 42 days detention, I mean, you know, this is, I mean, it's a 42-day detention. I mean, it breaches a very basic fundamental right not to be unlawfully detained.
Yeah.
It's enshrined in the Magna Carta. There's a hell of a lot at stake here. Do you think people actually realise that?
I don't think people think about it very much. I mean, partly, for most people, it's not going to happen to them, you know, and that tends to put things a bit further away.
Yeah.
They got other things to worry about, you know, their mortgage, their job, the economy, you know, all these things, you know, the granny's health or their daughter's health or whatever, all these things which are vital to them. And so typically it's, sort of, you know, they may have a sort of instinct about it, but it's the back of the queue.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, now, what I'm trying to do is drag it to the front of the queue.
Yeah, yeah.
Frankly, the measure of my success is not whether I win or lose the election.
Mm.
It's whether I can drag this into people's minds. And actually, we're, frankly, I think we're we're succeeding already in that respect. Well, your programme is one element of that.
Absolutely. The mere fact we're talking about it proves you're right. I mean, my concern with this is we have various bits of legislation. We had some terrorist or anti-terrorist legislation that was brought in a few years ago. I forget what the actual act was called, but it was used to actually to boot out and reject an old fellow who was, I believe, at a Labour Party conference who was kicking off.
That's right.
It's ridiculous. And you have the local authorities, the local councils, the various snooping powers, which I think we thought were going to generally be used to fight terrorism. That's fine. But they're used to spy on people and to make sure they're putting the right things in their recycling bins. It gets abused.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, which is a mouthful, people call it REIPA, R-I-P-A, was brought in about 2000, I think it was. And, you know, we were told in Parliament, this is on terrorism, this is on serious crime, serious organised crime. You know, we're imagining it being used against drug barons and so on, not against people for dog fouling, however bad that may be, or indeed, as you say, for checking on the way people fill their bins up. And that creep, I mean, there are even sadder examples, frankly. We've also had, in a wider sense, we've had somebody who read out the names of the Iraq war dead, being convicted, you know. And all issues like this, you know, as you say, Walter Wolfgang, people, forgive me for saying it on air, with a T-shirt for Bollocks to Blair on it, being moved on and arrested and so on. All those sorts of things, which are a part, actually, of our freedoms. They are a fundamental part of our freedoms. And yet the Parliament never, ever intended that these should be used. For these laws should be used for these purposes, but we've actually got 40,000 occasions of people being arrested under the Terrorism Act now, and there are not 40,000 terrorists in the country.
No.
So you know, it is clearly a problem of the law being the law of unintended consequences coming into effect.
Okay, I mean, what's your response to some critics who say, for example, that, 42 days, that means that some terrorist atrocity is avoided, that's a good thing. You've also got the president of the Association of Chief Police Officers, Ken Jones, who supported the government's proposals on 42 days. He said that in some cases the police were up against the buffers with the existing 28-day limit. I mean, do you have no sympathy to those thoughts?
Well, I'm afraid not. If either of those were true, I would have thought differently.
Okay.
I said to the Home Secretary, give me the evidence. Mm. And I said to her three times, and she didn't give me the evidence. So I went and found it. I went and talked to the lawyers involved in the case. I talked to the prosecution lawyers. I talked to the Metropolitan Police. And what I found was that the two people who were charged at about 28 days, the evidence for one was found at 4 days. The evidence for the other was found at 12 days. So both inside the 14-day period. And it wasn't all this sophisticated stuff about, you know, high-tech encrypted data. Yep. It wasn't forensically difficult data to analyze. It wasn't international intelligence data, which is the other thing they used for charge. It was things like witness statements, old-fashioned policing, text messages on phones, a receipt, handwritten and typed notes, one unencrypted computer record on one person's computer, and one unencrypted CD-ROM in another case. These are the things. This is old-fashioned policing. It's not. So all of this didn't say up. Now, actually, Ken Jones, the ACPO head, said, as you say, up against the buffers. So the day before the parliamentary debate, I thought, only fair, I ring him up and say, Ken, you know, did you look at the details in case he'd spotted something I hadn't?
Mm.
And he said no. So, you know, I'm afraid it's my job under those circumstances to. I mean, you know, people say, oh, we've got to listen to the experts. Only if the experts get it right.
Well, indeed. Okay, so detention without charge, CCTV and surveillance, a DNA database, ID cards and the database state, Orwell's 1984. How much of it did he get right?
Well, we're nowhere near that at the moment, is the truth of the matter. But what this is about in many ways is not just about us. It's about our kids and our grandkids' society. Because, you know, you step towards this, you know, I think it was the Information Commissioner who talked about sleepwalking towards a surveillance state. That was his phrase.
Yeah.
And, you know, each step is a further erosion. So we're not there yet by a long margin. But we are on the way. And I just don't, you know, I just think what I'm trying to do is, if you like, give people a wake-up call. If we use the sleepwalking analogy, I'm trying to give people a wake-up call so we don't get there. And, you know, what's been interesting to me, actually, is the absolutely huge number of responses I've had, ranging from emails to people flocking up to me in the station and saying, you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
But obviously, for a lot of people, for some people, they don't care. I mean, fair enough. I mean, that's reasonable. If that's their view, then, you know, it's a democracy.
But why do you think they don't care?
Well, either they believe the stuff about this improving our security,
yeah, which
in my view actually makes it worse in most cases.
Yeah.
It's an excuse not to have policemen on the street for a start.
Mm.
So there's partly they believe the stories, partly they haven't thought about it. And for some people, you know, for them, the prospect of a terrorist attack completely outweighs any erosion of liberty.
Mm.
Now, it's a legitimate viewpoint. It's not one I share. Bear in mind, I mean, Liverpool would know as well as anybody. I mean, we were bombed to hell and back in the Second World War
absolutely.
In defence of these liberties. Mm. Thousands
true.
Of people
very
died.
True.
And I think that, you know, if 2 million people died in the last century, as they did, in the Commonwealth citizens in total, to defend these liberties, we shouldn't give them away cheaply. But other people take a different view. And that's legitimate, that's reasonable, but I think that if we have the debate, then it'd be many, many fewer take a different view, and I think people start standing up for liberty in this country, which is something in our tradition anyway, something we have had written into us for a long time. I mean, you talked about Kelvin McKenzie earlier.
Mm.
He's not entirely popular in Liverpool, I know, and he then promptly insulted the people of Hull. So I walked up to him. I shouldn't tell you this, really. I walked up to him at a Murdoch party last week, and I put my arm around his shoulder. I said, "I'm looking forward to seeing you come, Kelvin. Could you tell me why I've had busloads of volunteers to Liverpool to come and attend your meeting?" And he went white as a sheet. We now know him as the M62 candidate. He's insulted two cities, one at each end of the thing. But the simple truth is, in this city over here, my new city is Hull, and the great tradition around here is William Wilberforce.
Mm, of course.
Yeah, and the defeat of slavery.
Yep.
And this isn't as big as that, but I think the same... You know, it wasn't actually in Britain's interest, I suppose, in some sense, to defeat slavery. We were the biggest nation in the world in commercial terms who sort of depended on it. But we put it to one side and we said, no, actually, we want to be a moral country and we want to live by the standards of freedom that we apply to all our citizens, to everybody. Yeah?
Okay.
Well, I think the same sort of thing applies here. That, at the end of the day, we'll say to ourselves, this is what we need to do.
Okay, so on the date that would have been George Orwell's birthday, we're not quite in an Orwellian state, but we're pretty far down the road, aren't we?
Well, we're a few steps down the road, and I want to stop us and go back the other way.
Yeah. Okay, listen, good luck with the election on July the 10th. And, you know, again, it's good to speak to, and I hate saying this because I'm not smarming up to you, but it's good to speak to a politician who actually stands by their convictions.
Well, let's see if I'm still standing in 3 weeks' time.
Listen, it's been a good conversation. David Davis, former Shadow Home Secretary, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.